Played with a player like that on this team.
All right. Hello, Bulls fans, and welcome to another episode of Chicago Bullseye. This is a special Chicago Bullseye. But, well, first of all, Fred Pfeiffer, on with me as always. How you doing, Doctor?
Doing okay, Mark. Thanks for recording this. I'm in the car, and, you know, what a win yesterday. You know, 50-plus at halftime, I said when they were up, you know, 30 points, I said. I think Milwaukee needs to be taught a lesson. I think we got to beat by 50. You know, not fully expecting that they would actually do it. And that was probably one of the best games the Bulls have had, beginning to end. I know there was an injury in MCW. I know Reed Frank got kicked out. You know, but overall, up and down the entire lineup, everybody had a fantastic game. And it's really good to see the Bulls close out in that fashion. Just dominating fashion, the biggest victory in the history of the franchise. So, I think they're ready. I think we're hanging on Cleveland and, I'm pretty excited. I feel now with the loss of Love and the loss of J.R. Smith for two games, the Bulls should be the favorite. I mean, they are my personal favorite. I probably have it about, you know, 60-40 right now in favor of the Bulls. You know, what say you? What do you think?
Well, I mean, first, I think that yesterday was, this series was really a microcosm of our entire season. I mean, we won 50 games this year. 50's good. I mean, it's not great. It's good. You know, you're in the realm of teams that obviously make the playoffs with 50. But, you know, it's not like in the special elite territory. But yet throughout the whole year, people thought that we were a special and elite team. And when I was talking to people yesterday, and I talked to a lot of people who were concerned that thought that we would maybe go 7, and they're, you know, Mark, what do you think? And I said, guys, we are going to spank the Milwaukee Bucks tonight. And I go, the reason that I know we're going to spank them is this. I go, this team all year has never played well when their backs were not against the wall. When the games didn't matter, and during the regular season, a lot of games don't matter. It's easy for games not to matter during the regular year, but they played down to their competition. Even those last 10 games of the season where they were playing for seeding, they almost gave up the 3 seed, which would have been suicide. They almost gave up the 3 seed to crap teams like the Pistons and the Magic and, you know, teams that they absolutely should not have been losing to. So to think that when they were up 3-0, you know, it's kind of a throwaway. When you're up 3-0, you think it's a gimme. And then even 3-1, I mean, game 5, I mean, you're still up 3-1. Like, you're really not against the wall. The Bulls are better than the Bucks. And when their backs are against the wall, they play well. And I knew that they were going to come out stronger. Did I think they'd win by 56 points or whatever it was? No. But I knew that they'd play well, and I thought that they'd win by a lot. I thought that they would crush the Bucks. And they certainly did that. So, you know, you got to start asking yourself, that I don't believe that we just got hot yesterday. And people think that, you know, a lot of shots fell and this and that. We were just on all cylinders. I don't think that we hit some elite territory yesterday I think it was calculated. I don't think that it was coincidence. I think it was very calculated. And I think that this team is very calculated, a lot more calculated than they seem. People call them inconsistent, and I don't. Inconsistency to me is some games you're on, some games you're off, but you're always giving it 110%, but you don't know what you're going to get every night. That wasn't the Bulls. You would see the Bulls lose this year when there's just no effort, there was no cohesion, there was no sense of urgency in a lot of games, and they just dogged basketball games this year. You can't explain why. You can't explain on a Tom Thibodeau coach team why so many games this season they dogged. I mean, but yet, you know, they lost to the Orlando Magic about a month ago, and then they come back the next game against the Cleveland Cavaliers without Derrick Rose and almost beat them, even though the Cavs had an out-of-body game. I mean, they played incredible when we played them, 3 weeks ago. They played incredible, and we barely lost to them. And, I mean, yet the game before, we lost to the Magic, and 2 games after that, we lose to the Bucks during the regular season. You know, you never knew what you – and then we lost to the Pistons a couple games after that. I mean, you never knew what you were going to get with this team at any point during this season. So – but I do believe it was calculated. I do believe that this team does know how to play together, and for whatever reason, they pick and choose their times to do it. Now, I think, I would imagine, that everybody on this team is stinging to beat LeBron James. I mean, this has been the hurdle that they've had to overcome every single season, and every single season they've failed. Now, you've had the Rose injuries. I mean, you've had things occur. You also had us in, 2010, not being prepared to play the Miami Heat. We were not good enough that year. Now, this year, people think we have the talent. Now, do we? I mean, I guess time will tell. But I do think you're going to see a much better Bulls team in this next series. I think you're going to see them showing up, and I do think that the first two games are extremely important. You have to win one of those games without J.R. Smith. You have to. There's no excuse. You should win both.
Yeah, before we get into that, though, I do want to also look back one more time. Look back at some of my predictions I made on this show in the Bull Zone. I hate to brag, but I was pretty much 100% right on every prediction. Let's look at some of those. What did I talk about? Number one, I talked about Nico being kind of minimized in the playoffs. That's exactly what happened. I love Nico. I think he's going to be an elite talent in the league. I think he's got all the ability to be a multi-year all-star. But, you know, going back to March and into April, people were just, Nico's going to be huge in the playoffs. Nico this, Nico that. Nico did nothing in this series. He was terrible for the most part when he did play. He hardly played yesterday. And he had a few minutes in yesterday. And again, the reason why is he hadn't shot the ball well all year. What he did do well was getting to the free throw line. That's a talent. That's an ability that few people have. And he did that to great effect in March, and he hit his free throws. But as I said before, and it's come, you know, pretty much to fruition, you don't get the calls in the playoffs. The whistle is swallowed a lot more, and rookies definitely don't get the calls. I think he got to the free throw line twice, maybe, in the entire series. I'm not sure. I don't have the stats in front of me. But I don't expect everybody to think, well, he'll have a bigger role in the next series. I don't see that at all. I don't.
Yesterday was the best game we had, and he played 8 minutes. Yesterday was the best game we had. There's no way. That sealed the deal yesterday. That sealed the deal.
Yeah, well, I don't know what's going to deal. I mean, something I also predicted was the wild card on the Bull Zone. And I think that came to fruition. He played great. I mean, he was phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal yesterday with the 19 points. I think he had the first half on my head. And he was great in games one, two. Pretty much every game we played, we won. He was fantastic. And every, you know, game five, I don't think he had a point. He lost. He was terrible in those games. Dunleavy is your most consistent three-point shooter. You need three-point shooting to win a title in the NBA. So it's up to him to put him in the best situation for him to hit three. I finally thought, yesterday, that the Bulls were able to punish Watts for doubling on Gasol so aggressively. Paul Gasol, every time he touched the ball in the post in the series, every time, he was hit with a double team. And it took four games before him to actually punish him. It was ridiculous. He couldn't come up with something better than they did. They finally did yesterday. And, you know, I was ecstatic with the overall play. You know, Gasol, I know a lot of people bang on him for the first four games. It's just ridiculous. It's just a personal bias against the guy. They make dumb faces when he gets bad calls. I understand all that. The first four games, he led the team in plus-minus. Basically, every minute he was out in the court, the Bulls dominated the Bucks. And every minute he wasn't, they got their ass kicked. Game four, which we lost by 2 points with all those turnovers, he was, in 33 minutes, like a plus-18. So that means in the 13 or so minutes or 14 minutes he didn't play, the Bulls were -20. He was absolutely a big reason that the Bulls won this series. I thought overall he did very, very well considering he was doubled every time he got the ball in the post. I thought his defense overall was pretty rock solid. So I thought Gasol was a really solid player for the Bulls in the playoffs. Butler was phenomenal with the exception of Game 5. And everybody talks about Game 5. Why did we lose Game 5? When Butler's 5-20 or 21 and Rose is 5-20 and 21, you're going to lose. They were 10-41 between the two of them. You're not going to win those games. It's impossible. You can't have your top two players shooting like that, and then everybody's looking to blame it on everything else. That's it. Those two guys shot horribly in Game 5, and the guys they were guarding, and Michael Carter-Williams and Middleton, killed us in Game 5. That's why we lost Game 5. It just comes down to that. It's as simple as that. I thought Noah's best game was Game 5. I thought he played okay yesterday, too. Hopefully he's starting to turn it around. I thought Noah was fine in those two games. But the first four, he was horrid. And he's still missing free throws. So, you know, I've kind of talked enough here. Any other things stick out for you for in this Milwaukee series, Mark?
Well, I mean, I want to focus more on yesterday's game. As good as it looks, and it looked good. I mean, obviously, Derek was a plus 41. Jimmy was a plus 46. These are numbers you're never going to see probably again in these players' careers. It's unbelievable, especially in a playoff game, to win by that margin. But, you know, we came out early. We came out strong. I do feel like Milwaukee gave up once we got – because we got a – what did we get? About a 30-point lead. We got a 30-point lead within the first half of the game. And, Giannis, what he did was just ridiculous. And Mike Dunleavy, when he just went charging into him, obviously, he wrote his own ticket out of the game.
He said, well, no doubt he should be suspended for 10 games. One of the biggest cheap shots I've ever seen, he could have seriously hurt him. And it's inexcusable what that bum did. And he should be suspended for 2 weeks. I can't believe Derek Smith got suspended for only 2 games. The guy, how much more would he have got? Just because he wasn't looking at him and he swung with a close fist and nailed him and almost knocked him out, he only gets 2 games? You can't allow that. That was an egregious hit, and they only gave him 2 games.
I agree with you. I agree with you. But I don't want to focus on – I mean, obviously what Giannis did was awesome. But once that happened, that game was over. I mean, obviously Giannis was ejected. That's huge. But, you know, beyond that, it showed. That was when – I mean, Milwaukee gave up. So the fact that we won by 56, don't look so into that. I mean, we obviously outplayed them. We played really well. But – other than Jared Bayless and O.J. Mayo, nobody on that team played 20 – Chris Middleton. Nobody on that team played 20 minutes. All of their starters – Middleton was the only one that went over 20 minutes. You had everybody else was 18 or under. So, you know, they really – I mean, they weren't playing their best players, but also we were. And I don't understand when we were up – I mean, come on. We weren't supposed to go 6. We did. This is going a little late for us. You see that Milwaukee's giving us cheap shots. That wasn't the only one that game. You had multiple. You had O.J. Mayo charge Jimmy Butler off the bench. That is something. That if Amari Stoudemire in a critical, critical game, in what was it, 09? Maybe it was 10? Critical game against the Spurs. Gets suspended a game for barely his toe touching the court. Yet O.J. Mayo is in his jumpsuit during a timeout. And he comes off the bench and comes onto the floor and pushes Jimmy Butler and gets in his face. He better get suspended like 10 games next year, because come on, that's just ridiculous. But A, they gave up. B, we had our players, I felt, played too much. I mean, that game was over at the half. Why are you playing Noah starting the fourth quarter? I don't understand it. Jimmy Butler still played 32 minutes. Gasol played 30. I mean, you're winning by like 50 points. Why pull these guys in the third quarter and see? I mean, if you start losing the lead, you're up by 40. If you start losing the lead, you put the guys back in. But
you're a Derrick Rose taking a charge when your team's up 40. And for him to start the fourth quarter with Noah on the court, with Taj on the court, is freaking inexcusable. And I know there's some fans out there who are going to say, always making excuses for this. You're up 40 points going into the fourth quarter. There's no way Noah, with his bone on bone issue and his knee, should have been anywhere near that court. Not only did he played till about, 7 minutes, 6 minutes left in the quarter. How stupid.
But none of their guys are playing. None of their starters were playing.
No, he threw it away. What is it that's so valuable for Noah to learn in that game against the third string Milwaukee Bucks that outweighs the risk of injury? There is nothing, absolutely nothing. And I said, I am I am completely fine with his ass being fired, you know, getting to the finals. That is so sick and stupid, what he did yesterday in the fourth quarter. There is no excuse. And I know no reporters had the guts to ask him, what were you thinking when Mo was in the game in the fourth? Why? Up 40 when they had their third string in. Yeah, I'm glad finally had an announcer asking why. Finally, the TNT broadcast, was it Smith?
When Jorge Gutierrez is playing for the first time in the series, you know that you can pull your guys. I mean, you should have had Taj Gibson playing at the end of the game there. I mean, you should have Nico Mirotic played the least amount of minutes yesterday that he played in any game in the series. Now, I understand why that his minutes changed, but why would you not be playing him as much as you did before when you're up by 40 points? I mean, I understand that you're changing your rotation for the next game, that Mirotic's minutes are going to go down and that it's going to be split between the big three, Taj, Gasol, and Noah. But yesterday was not the day to make that point. Mirotic played 8 minutes. Yeah, something can happen. And not only, Fred, two things here. One, for anybody that wants to say that the risk of injury is low, look at 2010. Derrick Rose in the game, up by 20. What is it, 3 minutes left in the game? But we can argue that because it was only 3 minutes, but we can argue that. But you saw what happened. You saw what happened, and that was not a chippy game like this one. This game, you had their players pushing us around.
Go ahead, guys.
Yeah, I mean, you had crazy fouls occurring. It was an extremely physical game. Why would you keep these guys in the game? What's your up by 30?
Because, you know what? He's a defensive genius, but when it comes to some things, he's an idiot. It is stupid. It's plain stupid. And I don't care what Jeff Van Gundy says about his friend. Oh, he's always coming up with some lame excuse for why Joaquin Noah is in a game up freaking 40 in the fourth quarter. And I'm so sick of people. I mean, honestly, you're so blind just to say Tip is always right. Come on. That is ridiculous. And Paxton and Gar Foreman are completely in the right on this for them to be outraged about it. You're risking Noah out there. Noah should not play one more minute than he has to. He's got motor going in his knee. There is nothing good that can happen. But just got it out there. You know what? If you can't get by Cleveland and you can't get by Atlanta, take your freaking duffel bag and get the hell out of town. I freaking had it. I am so sick of people overrating this guy. What happened? Oklahoma City fires a coach that had Billy Donovan. What? They didn't wait? They didn't wait for a guy that's got a losing record in the playoffs? They didn't wait for a guy that pulled idiot nonsense like yesterday, playing Noah in the fourth quarter up by 40? They didn't wait for a guy who can't get along with management? I understand he's a defensive genius, and he's done a lot. Yeah, let's see where that gets him in the West. The same coach Sacramento to a winning record. The guy's done nothing in the playoffs. Everybody talks about, well, we've had tons of injuries. All of them partly his fault. Some of them partly his fault, excuse me. And every year, even the year when we had the best record in basketball in Rose's MVP year, we go five games with a terrible Indiana team. We go six games with an awful Atlanta team, who started out a great Kirk Heinrich without. Jeff Teague wasn't the same Jeff Teague. That was the first time they could ever do a damn thing in the NBA. So I don't want to hear it every year. He's, for the most part, with the exception of the year where we beat the Nets, you know, that's the only year where we've really kind of surpassed expectations. I could not believe what I was seeing. I am 100% behind Paxton and Donovan. You can't have stupid things like that. That is just so stinking stupid. It's unbelievable.
Last night was one of the that was definitely a game where I was like, man, I wish that I was just at the bar watching this with Fred right now, because I would have loved. I mean, I was enraged. Jimmy Butler still played 32 minutes. Paul Gasol, who's 36 years old, played 30 minutes yesterday.
Paul Gasol played 30 minutes in
a game where they're not winning by 56. They won by 50. They won 120 to 66. The game was far decided, 54 points. The game was decided in the second quarter. I mean, you easily could take guys Ben should, at least in the third. I get it. You don't want to lose momentum if the team comes back and if the Bucks start to come back. So fine. The third, the beginning of the third, the game was over. Once Giannis was out, the game was over. The lead kept going. Dude, we outscored them. We had almost 30 points in every single quarter. They never hit 20. I mean, by the third quarter, the game was over.
Let's talk about Kirk Heinrich. He's back. Kirk Heinrich is back. He played 20 minutes last night. He finishes with a plus two. How do you play 20 minutes in a game that your team wins by 54 points and you finish plus two? He had the lowest plus minus on the team. And yet, he's out there. We're going to see that guy, that chump, out there again for the Cleveland series. Snell's in the doghouse. It's Kirk Heinrich time. I mean, I don't even know what to say. Heinrich played 2 minutes in the previous, like, four games. He was, like, a minus 10. He's plus minus. He was negative for his series. I have no idea what he sees in this guy. He shucked again. He had 3 points yesterday. McDonough scored him for the series. McDonough, in 6 minutes, outscored Heinrich for the series. I couldn't believe this guy out there played 20 minutes. Then he got a defenders hammering me on Twitter because I'm telling everybody what a chump this guy is and how he should retire. I'm just getting all these guys on Twitter. Why didn't he have a good game? No, he didn't. He was plus two in a 54 in 20 minutes in a 54-point win. Every minute that chump was out there, we pretty much played walks even. I don't want to win a title. I'm not going to win when Heinrich on the court. He sucks.
I know
my friend Matt P. is listening to this, and he guaranteed against that brought up Heinrich. This is very relevant to the next series. He wasn't even playing, and then all of a sudden, he brings him out for game four, which helps to lose that game. He got the ball at 15 seconds left. You throw Heinrich out there, a guy who hasn't been guarded since January, to spread the floor for an isolation with Rose. How dumb is that? And then he's back. He's playing insane amount of minutes in game six to me. Whatever, man. I am so dumb with kids.
I don't care. The only reason that I care, you shouldn't care. Let me phrase this right. As far as the minutes in Game 6 went yesterday, if I felt like Thibodeau was playing that game the way that he should have been, where once the game was over, you're playing the scrubs, I don't care then that Kirk Heinrich's playing 20 minutes, but that was clearly not what he was doing. On the Milwaukee Bucks yesterday, you had two bench players that played more than any player in the starting lineup yesterday. Every bench player yesterday was close to 20 minutes. You had a couple that were in the low teens, but like besides that, almost every single bench player, every bench player played, and almost every bench player was in the double digits. It was well in the double digits in minutes. On our team, you had four guys. We were up by 54 points. Niko Maricic only played 8 minutes. Doug McDermott played six, and he's somebody that's never going to play. If he gets injured, it's not going to really affect our team. Nazi played seven, and Etuan Moore played four. When you are up by 54 freaking points, you need to be playing the guys that aren't going to be playing in the next round. If anything happens, then it doesn't really matter. The fact that at the end of the game you're still playing guys that are valuable to our team was just ridiculous. The fact that you had starters going into the fourth quarter and then at the end you're still not playing the guys. The fact that Doug McDermott's coming in with 6 minutes left in the game is just insane. I mean, it's just like he should have been playing half the third quarter. I mean,
absolutely.
Once you take that lead, put these guys in and start seeing if you can maintain it without playing your starters. I just...
We beat this dead horse, you know, but let's go on.
On the radio today, they're talking about Heinrich and how great of a game he had. Well, Kirk Heinrich, you're right, he was only a plus two, and he's playing against bullcrap players. I mean, he's playing against that Jorge Gutierrez guy who didn't play the whole series. I mean, when I saw him, when I was sitting at courtside during game two, I saw him on the bench, and I'm like, who is this guy? Is he the ball boy? Like, who is he? I've never seen him before in my life. I've never seen this guy before in my entire life. So, whatever. I mean, obviously, still as good of a game as we played. I a lot of complaints still about Tom Thibodeau. But that being said, the series is over. It still went two games beyond what it should have. Going into this next series, how do you feel? Are you confident?
I still feel good. I mean, because this team is filled with pros. Jimmy Butler had a fantastic overall series. The guy's a superstar. He's emerging as a superstar. Rose is back. You know, Rose is up and down, too. Too many turnovers, but still, overall, I thought he played pretty good. You know, overall.
He still took 7 threes. Dunleavy had one of his best games of the year, and he took more. And Rose took more threes than Dunleavy.
Yeah, I mean, it's not good, but overall, though, Mark, you got to be happy with how Rose played. He won us some games, and you did see him hit that level where he's approaching MVP Derrick Rose. I thought Gasol was rock solid. I thought Noah came around at the end, and you know, things seem to be moving in the right direction. How can you say anything else but, you know, beating a team on their home court by 54 points, you know? So you got to hand it to them. They did do it. And I like our chances. I just don't think Cleveland is that good. I don't. I think they're, you know, they got the best player on the planet. I definitely think they get destroyed by several teams in the West. But, you know, that's what they got. They got the best guy on the planet. And you got, you know, Irving is rock solid. But now the Love's hurt. J.R. Smith's going to miss two games. Is there anybody else on that team that you're just like, wow, what are we going to do to beat him? You know, Miles Goss is a decent rim protector. He's a good rebounder. But who else on that team are you just, like, scared of? Nobody remotely. I mean, the Heat, to me, were much, much more of a difficult team, you know, to handle. I don't get why everybody's, oh, man, you know, Cleveland. I don't see how they're the favorites. That's, like, the thing to me. It's like, God, anybody watching this, you know, like, the Bulls have played them pretty well all year, and now you're missing Kevin Love. Come on, man. We got four guys in Gasol, Butler, Gasol, Butler, Rose. No, just those three alone, but Taj Gibson, too, I throw in there, who are, I think, you know, right there. Almost, you know, obviously you probably have LeBron ahead of them, but, you know, and Irving and Rose are pretty close, but they're clearly better than anybody else in that team, those four guys. So you might have one and two, you know, come up the argument, but from spots 3 to 7, I think it's all Bulls.
Let me ask you this. If I was going to ask you right now, what do you think the spread is in Vegas for game one? Do you know what the spread is?
I don't. I haven't looked it up. I would say Cleveland by 5.5.
Are you serious?
I swear to God, I'm in a car, Mark. I didn't even look at it. Is that what it
Cleveland
is?
Cleveland by 5.5. That was amazing.
Thank you. Well, you know, I'm a big fan. Thank you. I'm a big fan of betting on basketball, so I'm pretty good at setting the lines. I like playing that game quite a bit. You got the other games there? Let's play it. Let's get the other games there. You got any other ones?
All right, hang on. Hey, yeah. I had them all. You know what? I just closed it. Give me two seconds. Las Vegas, NBA. I just had it. I can get them back up here.
Before
okay,
we get
so
back
the,
up.
So the Golden State, Memphis, game one, what do you think?
Golden State, Memphis, I'd say Golden State by 5.5.
Between 9 and 10, depending
oh
on
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Oh, that's right. Conley's
Memphis doesn't
I
have
forgot.
Conley.
Yeah, no wonder. I totally forgot about that. I would have had it right if it wasn't for that. What's the other one?
All right.
If Conley was better, it'd be 5.5, guaranteed. Go ahead.
I would agree with you. I would agree with that. It would definitely be less. It would definitely be closer. It'll be a low-scoring game, too, if Conley was there for sure. So Atlanta-Brooklyn, what do you think? Game 7.
And this game's going to be in Atlanta. I'd say Atlanta by 6.
Between 4.5 and 5.
Woo! Wow, I take Atlanta and I take the over. I mean, I take Atlanta on that one. I think Atlanta will blow them.
I think so too. I mean, it's a statement game. It's game 7. This is the time to do it. But it is game. It's game 7. It's game 7. Yeah. I mean, so I'm sure. I think it's so generally, if you're a team that's got a good lead in a series, which they did, I think they were up 2-0, right, on Brooklyn, and then Brooklyn came back. Was that what it was?
It was 2. Well, it's 2-2. Yeah, 2-0, 2-2. This is game 7 already. I mean, you know, I've had a lot of stuff going on this week. I can't believe it's game 7 already. Really?
I thought it was. Well, San Antonio Clippers game 7 is tomorrow. So I would imagine
what's
that game
that
7.
All right, let me get that one. In LA, gosh, that was a disappointing loss from San Antonio last night. I did catch some of that. Ooh, I'll say LA. Boy, San Antonio by 1.
You think San Antonio by 1?
Yeah.
LA by 1.5 to 2.
No. I'll take San Antonio on that one.
You know what? I would take San Antonio, and here's why. There is a major problem with L.A. The fact that L.A., one of their three best players, can just get hacked at the end of the game, and he can't shoot free throws. He is in the playoffs, DeAndre Jordan is averaging 34% from the line. And I think last night he was like 10 for 14. So he was averaging 34% from the line, despite the fact that he was like 10 for 14 last night. So the fact that you have that factor, these games are close. Well, the beginning of the series is not close, but I would imagine that an elimination game is close. I would imagine that I would imagine both teams are going to play really well. If the game is close, you got to give the favorites to San Antonio because, I mean, you just follow DeAndre Jordan. And I don't understand why they let themselves get in these, the Clippers let themselves get in these predicaments at the end of the game. The fact is, once you start seeing the team start fouling Jordan, just take him out. Is he really that valuable to your team where it's worth it that he's going to get sent to the line and probably is going to miss both of his free throws? You're going to have no offense. Like when we played them, the Clippers, they were up by like 15, 20 points, but the Clippers didn't score for like 8 minutes because DeAndre Jordan kept going to the line. So, I mean, they didn't even have the chance to score. Now, his defense stopped us from scoring, but if the game is close, I would imagine, though I think Big Baby, I don't know what happened. Big Baby, I don't know if Big Baby's playing tomorrow or not. He got injured yesterday. So, you know, let's assume he's healthy. I would rather have Big Baby playing than DeAndre Jordan getting fouled every 2 seconds. Now, if Big Baby's not playing, you may not have a choice. I'm not sure if he is or if he's not.
Well, Bulls might have the same problem the way Noah's shooting free throws. I think he was 1-10 in the series. I think he was 1-16. Off the top of my head, these numbers off the top of my head. I think Noah's 1 for his last 16 from the free throw line. Nobody's paying attention to this, and very few teams have done. As you get deeper in the series, the smart teams will realize it. Noah, there's something up in his head about shooting free throws. It's clear you see the other his teammates are aware of it. As they try to encourage him, as he got the line every time he shoots a free throw, you know, he sees it all the time. And I don't know what it is, like a mental block with the guy, but I did some, you know, looking on the internet. I think since March 1st, I think he's had one game, I believe, where he shot over 50% from the free throw line.
He shot 50% yesterday.
Every other game, well, that is two. Every other game, he's been 50 or below. What was he yesterday, 1 of 2?
1 of 2, but he's 1 of 8 for the series. He never took more than 2 in a game. He's not getting to the line that much, so I don't think it's that big of a deal. He shot 46% for the series, so that's okay.
46%? No, from the free throw line.
But his field goal percentage for the series was a bit better than it was during the regular season.
Sure, but he didn't shoot a shot outside of 5 feet. NBA.com and look at his shot chart. He doesn't shoot outside of 5 feet anymore. It's unbelievable. He had a good game, though, yesterday. I thought he played well. And game five, he looked a lot more, you know, aggressive. I thought he was looking for a little bit more offense. I thought he's looking better. So that's a good thing. Looking very active. So it's just that Noah, you could tell on offensive rebounds, that was one incredible part of his game where he'd be able to, you know, consistently tip in shots, dunk it in, and he's with the screen. He's always just a little bit too, you know, short on him now. So it's clear he doesn't have that same hop he used to. I mean, he rarely gets those now, and it has a little bit surprising when you consider how much more attention some other guys on the team attract, and Butler and Gasol and Rose. He should be killing it on the offensive end, offensive boards. And it's just not there anymore. So anyhow,
what's going to happen? So before, I want to talk about a couple other topics. So before we move on to those topics, Bulls Clavs in the series, what's it going to be?
I got the Bulls in 6. I'm taking the Bulls in 6. 4-2.
I'm going to take, look, at the end of the day, the ups and downs of the season. Now, I do think, like I said, that I thought that it was a kind of a controlled up and down. It wasn't just inconsistency, but I still haven't seen enough. The Cavaliers still have the two best players on the floor. Now, we might have players 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9, but they do have numbers 1 and 2. Those are the guys that are going to be playing the most. we have not really proven anything this year. We have certainly not proven that we can stop LeBron. Derek played well against Kyrie Irving once, but we'll see. I mean, Derek got smushed by Michael Carter-Williams in two games last series, so we'll see. But I'm going to take the Cavaliers in six.
All right, man. I only got two more minutes, so...
All right, real quickly. So, first of all, Cleveland Cavaliers. Do you think the Cleveland Cavaliers regret the Kevin Love trade?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, first of all, Wiggins, I never really understood what, you know, why, I guess, in retrospect, I mean, Love was a top five, top ten player, right? You know, triple doubles. The guy could do a lot of great things, but I think you can make the argument easily that Wiggins would be a better fit with them. He's incredibly athletic, and he's got a long future ahead of him. Love, to me, never looked healthy all year. He just did not look right. And, he's basically been relegated to a guy who's out there popping three-pointers. And, you know, now this, right? He's out for the playoffs. So I think they absolutely, you know, will come to regret it. What say you?
I agree 100%. Well, look, Love had a good series. But Andrew Wiggins looked a good series. I thought Love has had a decent season. 16.4, 9.7 rebounds, 18.8 PER. It's nothing to scoff at, but I think there's a really good chance that you're going to lose him this offseason. And the fact that you might lose him would be a very devastating thing for the Cleveland Cavaliers. I mean, at the end of the day, Andrew Wiggins was in the realm of where Love was with his statistics, yet you know, he's 20. He might not be ready to win a title today, but he'd be with you forever. And then once this is done with LeBron, you could build your franchise around Andrew Wiggins, and Cleveland would have a long, long history ahead of them. Whereas
not
you
only
lose
that,
Kevin Love,
he's better defensively. He's already better defensively than Kevin Love.
Well, yeah. So think about what the perimeter defense would be if you had Andrew Wiggins and his length. Now you've given up the future of the franchise. And this guy, Love may leave at the end of the season, and Andrew Wiggins looks like he actually is going to be a pretty good NBA player. I was all for the trade at the beginning, but in hindsight, which hindsight is 2020, but I'm just going to say, if I am the Cleveland Cavaliers, I regret now that I made that trade. Bad trade for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Next question. Donovan to the Oklahoma City Thunder. Is this the right move?
Wait, what?
Billy Donovan.
Oh, Billy Donovan. Oh, the new coach, right, yeah. I think it's about as good of a hire as you can make. I think that guy's an excellent coach. Joakim Noah said it. It's like a father figure to him. You know, I think Billy Donovan's an excellent coach. And he did a great job at Florida, won two national titles, back-to-back, I believe. And, I think absolutely it was a good hire. I think, now, this whole college to the pro thing has been kind of, Brad Stevens has done an incredible job taking a horrific Boston roster to the playoffs this year, winning games he has no business winning. So I think that hire kind of, and his success, with a terrible roster, I think it's kind of changed it a little bit. And I think Billy Donovan was a great hire.
I'm going to disagree with this on a couple levels. First, you bring up Brad Stevens, and that's great, but I looked the other day at a list of 15 college coaches that have transitioned to the NBA, and of those, you really couldn't say that any of them had great careers, but the only ones that I would say have been all right out of, 15 coaches that have done it was, Brad Stevens and maybe Rick Pitino.
Larry Brown had success in coach in NCAA and obviously the Clippers and other NBA teams. Pacers.
Yes, but it took him some time. Stevens, it took a season. And Pitino took over a really crap. The teams that Pitino coached were not good teams. So they went up tremendously in wins every year that he coached. So, or from when he took over the team. So I'll give it to Pitino as well. Most college coaches do not transition well to the NBA. In fact, I was reading about when Mike Montgomery took over for the Golden State Warriors. And what I found to be really interesting was that apparently he had a type of offense that was like a free-flowing, fast-break transition offense where the players kind of called their own plays. And apparently he gave Baron Davis the keys to the car. And Mike Dunleavy, in a famous quote from, 2000 and 4 or something like that, called out the coach and said, I don't even know what the heck is going on right here. There's no organization to this off whatsoever. And, you know, I mean, he was probably like a rookie at the time, really. He was in the first couple of years in the league. And Mike Dunleavy was calling out his coach over there. But I just thought that was interesting. But you don't have a lot of player, you don't have a lot of examples of people who have come from college and coached well in the NBA. Now, that being said, I'm okay with teams taking a risk. Donovan could very well be a very good coach, but he did have a big learning curve in college. When he took over Florida, it took a couple years for them to get good, to be able to start recruiting good players. Not only that, when they started recruiting good players, nobody remembers this because everybody remembers the two titles that they won back-to-back. Prior to that, they had tremendous teams that were highly rated going into the tournament, and 5 years in a row they lost to lesser-seeded teams early on in the tournament and were upset early on in the tournament, 5 years in a row. It wasn't until like his 10th year at the team that they started to play up to their expectations. So now you're moving to a team that Kevin Durant only has 1 year left on his contract, and this team is built to win now. You do not have a learning curve. Maybe you have a learning curve of a month or two where you're getting it together. But you have to be coming in with a game plan right away. This team is expected to win 60-plus games next year, no question. Russell Westbrook was up for MVP this year. Kevin Durant won MVP last year. They have a deep team with the players that they've brought in there. This team's built to win now. I don't like the hire at all. Now, Durant's supporting it, but we'll see what he's supporting 3 weeks into the season if they're not winning games.
Oh, good points. All good points.
I think
he's going to do a good job, though. I will disagree. I guarantee you, looking back, I guarantee his team's going to be pretty good next year. Wait and see.
How about this? Any points that you want to make before we get off here? Are there anything that you've seen now that we're pretty much done with the first round matchups or whatever? I mean, just even with the first round matchups that we have left, what has surprised you in the playoffs so far?
Well, definitely Atlanta. I mean, I didn't expect that to go, you know, be as evenly played as it has been. You know, I know New Jersey has talent, all old talent, but, I mean, New Jersey, Brooklyn has talent, old talent, but, you know, they played a lot better. Darren Williams turned back the clock the other day to win that game. I think it was game 4. Biggest surprise, I would say to me, Golden State just demolishing New Orleans and that comeback win. In game 3, I didn't expect them to look as good as they did. I think it's just clear right now that that's the team to beat. And it's going to be between them and whoever wins this Clippers-San Antonio series. I just feel those teams are just a step above, you know. And I'm really impressed with how the Clippers have played. Those teams are just a step above than anybody else. I don't think, you know, I hate to say it, even if the Bulls get out of the East, I don't see them beating San Antonio, Golden State, or L.A. I just think those teams are better right now. I need Nico to take another step for us in order for us to beat those teams. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to happen this year. What about you?
I have a couple. First, Portland. I was very surprised by how poorly Portland showed up. I thought Portland was a better team than this. I thought Portland was going to beat the Grizzlies. You got a lot of big names over there, but they really didn't show up, and that was a surprise to me. It's going to be interesting to see what they do in the offseason, because clearly they're a team that right now is not made to beat the West. They didn't have Wesley Matthews, but do you really think that – I mean, they won one game against the Blazers, I believe. Do you really think that they would have been that much better? They got destroyed in a couple of those games. They lost by, 15 points in game 2. They lost by almost 20 points in game 1. They had some bad losses. So, I mean, do you really think that Wesley Matthews would have made, a world of difference? I don't think so. Maybe they win one more with them. But the fact is, look, I mean, the Grizzlies didn't have Mike Conley in Game 5, and they still beat the Blazers 99-93. So I was very surprised about that. The Washington Wizards shocked me. The Washington Wizards got swept by Toronto during the regular season. They come out and they sweep Toronto during the playoffs. They look really good. I'm happy we didn't play them in Round 1. It surprises the hell out of me they played as well as they did. The Memphis Grizzlies, a team that, Fred, we saw live about a month ago, it surprised me how good they are. I don't think I ever gave them credit. They don't really have the star power that attracts attention. They got the big men down low. But really, at this point, I don't think Randolph is considered what he was 2 years ago with Memphis. I think now it's really just Gasol. Conley's taken a couple steps up. But, still, the Grizzlies yesterday without Mike Conley played great against the Blazers winning that series. And they looked really, really strong throughout. And it surprised me how good they looked. Now, they will get smushed in the next round. But that may not have happened if Connolly was in the game, it was playing. I mean, maybe they would have had a chance. I don't think they would have won, but they might have made it a series. I don't think they will, but they look good. And the last thing to me was Dallas. I mean, I never thought Houston was that dominant of a team. We'll see as the playoffs go on if that proves to be true or not, but they certainly looked like it against Dallas. I thought, you know, Dallas went out this offseason and they made moves to win and to win now. It's another year, you know, you go out, you make big splashes and it doesn't work out. Obviously, the Rondo situation, we talked about on the last show, but that was a shocker, just how unprofessional and ridiculous he was. But that team is nowhere near a title. So it'll be interesting because I know they have a lot of cap space this offseason. What are the Dallas Mavericks going to do? What do you do? I mean, Dirk Nowitzki's turning 37. I have no idea what you do now. I mean, I almost think I don't know what you do because it's like you got to almost just ride it out with Dirk. But who's going to want to go play with Dirk Nowitzki at this point? Nobody's going to go there and be like, you know, you're going to get second-rate players. I mean, you're going to get guys like Monte Ellis, guys – who are, like, you know, who are second-rate players that want to play in the West on a winning team, quote-unquote, but the Dallas Mavericks aren't going to go anywhere. That was proven to me in the playoffs. I thought that the Mavericks going into the season would be better than they were, and I thought that they put up a little bit more of a fight against the Rockets. But at the same time, when your starting point guard is not only playing as bad as he is, but being a distraction, I don't know how you maybe could have expected anymore, but that all kind of surprised me.
There is so much drama in this upcoming offseason between – if you look at what's going to happen with the Lakers, if you look what's happened with Dallas, they have tons of cap space. What's going to happen with Oklahoma City, whether or not they're going to, you know, possibly trade Durant. You know, and then look at what's going to happen with Kevin Love in Cleveland. It's going to be just a fantastic, interesting offseason. And also for the beloved Bulls, because they got some tough decisions to make with Noah and Tosh coming up. And, you know, I think you're going to have to trade one of those guys in order to get Jimmy here, keep Jimmy here, because somebody's going to throw – a lot of money at Jimmy, and I'm not sure we have enough to keep, you know, under the cap to keep all these guys. But, you know, we'll have to wait and see. Mark, I got to run, my man.
Real fast, you can go above the cap when it's your own team. I'm sure they will, considering that next season, or the year after next, you just be playing the tax for 1 year. The year after next, you're going to, the cap should be high enough that none of this really matters.
Well, they're not going to do that. They sure as heck aren't going to do that. They're not going to do that if they lose to Cleveland in the second round.
Well, you're right. I don't think that there's any reason that we need to be thinking. We got to see how we play against Cleveland. If we play well, then we can start considering who, what, where, what are we going to do going into next year. Up until then, we can't do anything. But I don't think that the salary aspect will be a reason that Noah won't be here. It'll be based on performance if he's not re-signed. But that being said, great show, Fred, as always. Fred, keep rocking, my man. Good to talk as always. We'll do a show soon. And until next time, if it ain't Bulls,
it ain't basketball.
All right, Fred. I'll get it ready, man.
Thanks, Mark, man. I'll talk to you
later.
Take
care, buddy.
Bye. We'll be right back.